Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
You're listening to Retaking Elysium, a Mars Consortium story, written and read by M. Darusha Wame. Chapter 3. Jules closed their eyes against the scenery rushing past the window. The hyperloop to the Quito space elevator ran above ground most of the way as it gained altitude, and while Jules was sure the view was interesting, the speed made looking out the window impossible. If they were nauseated on the train, how were they ever going to manage spaceflight? They turned away from the window and flipped open their handheld to stare at the Earth Aerospace Authority clearance again. All stamped and duly noted, one passage to Quito Orbital and one berth on the Mars Consortium Shuttle Burrows, baggage allotment 21.64 kilograms. The extra 4.5 kilos were payback for all those years Jules had strained to see in a crowd and failed to find clothes that fit in the adult section. At first, it hadn't seemed hard to get everything they wanted into the single soft-sided duffel they were allowed to bring. Mars had access to all the holostations for both Earth and Lunar Colony, so they didn't need books or movies. They would be given a uniform for work, and the living quarters were supplied with cookware and basic furniture. But cramming an entire life into 17 kilograms was an incredible challenge. And in the end, Jules used every gram of their extra ration. For spaceflight, at least, it paid to be small. The train began to slow enough for Jules to comfortably look out the window, but the view had become dominated by the anchors and struts for the elevator. Jules couldn't see the thick cable running high into the heavens, or the car which transported people and goods up to the orbital. But there were no end of solid metal beams and the large electric trucks painted in garish high-vis colors and festooned with blinking lights. It was heavy industry as far as the eye could see. I'd better get used to that, Jules thought. Mars wasn't likely to be much different. One day, the elevator station would probably resemble an airport in a hub city, but now the service kiosks and niches where cafes and shops would be were empty or being used for storage. Flimsy printed signs were tacked up to indicate the path through to the cars, but the flow of people from the train made the direction obvious. Luna was slowly starting to become a tourist destination, but the planned resort hotel on the orbital had developed a funding crisis the previous year, and that stopped work on most of the visitors' infrastructure here. As Jules looked around at their fellow travelers, they figured that almost all of them were going to space for work. They joined the queue for the next car and scanned their EAA authority at a terminal near the entrance to the waiting room. Their bag was passed through an inspection machine and their biometrics were read half a dozen times, but it was efficient enough that they still had to stand around to wait for a car to return from the orbital. It was so thoroughly mundane that it was easy to forget what was happening. They were about to board a vehicle which would shoot them into space, where they'd get on an honest-to-goodness spaceship and go to Mars. When they were a kid, this was the stuff of adventure hollows, and now it was a lucrative, if somewhat unusual, means to hopefully ridding themselves of years of debt and maybe even getting ahead. What a time to be alive. The trip up to the orbital reminded Jules of the beginning of those carnival rides that drop you into free fall when the car shoots up to the top of the apparatus. Of course, it lasted a lot longer, and Jules hoped that there was no freefall part. When the car stopped, after the light over the doors turned green and the safety belts disengaged, Jules stood and carefully took a step. They thought they felt lighter, but it was hard to tell. They joined the throng of people entering the orbital and looked around for the way to their shuttle. If Quito Station felt unfinished, the orbital seemed more like it was never meant to be anything more than a working dock. Jules understood why the resort's backers pulled out. There weren't even any windows. What was the point in being in space if you couldn't see the stars? They found a tattered, crooked sign with the Mars Consortium logo on it, and an arrow pointing down a dimly lit corridor. Jules shouldered their 21.64 kilograms and set off in search of the burrows. They had to stick to the walls, as there were cargo handlers moving crates on forklifts driving down the middle of the hall, and they were beginning to wonder if the sign had been pointing in the wrong direction when they saw an open hangar door. They peered inside to find a dozen people seated in folding chairs, their own baggage at their feet. A uniformed functionary with a ruggedized handheld looked up. EIA authorization? Jules pulled up the form, and the official scanned the document. Morales, she confirmed, and Jules nodded. Grab a seat if you can find one. We're waiting for a few more people, then we still need clearance to launch. It'll be a while. Okay. Jules turned to where the other people were waiting, but the chairs were all occupied. It wouldn't hurt to stand for a while, they figured. After all, they were about to sleep for months. Plenty of time to rest on the way. It was just over an hour later when Jules found their seat on the shuttle. It was odd, sort of like a recliner with a glove-like feature on the left armrest. They got settled and a different uniformed attendant helped strap them in. You'll be awake for a few hours at takeoff and landing, but the captain will tell you when to get ready for the sleep. Jules looked up at the guy in his Mars Consortium jumpsuit. How does that work exactly? A smile creased the fellow's face, creating a pair of rather fetching dimples above his thick and glossy beard. It was quite disarming, and Jules appreciated that they picked someone for this job who was so distracting. Your hand goes in here, he said, lightly guiding Jules' hand toward the glove, without actually sliding their fingers inside. There's a monitor and, I'm not going to lie, a needle. You'll feel it, but it's not bad. The drugs will knock you out, and there's an IV for nutrition and hydration while we're underway. Jules nodded. The whole process had seemed a lot less terrifying when it had been theoretical, but the attendant had obviously seen plenty of people with the jitters before. He gave their hand a squeeze, and the smile lit up his face again. This isn't first-class travel, but it's better than banging around in zero-G for months. I've done it dozens of times. You'll be fine, promise. Jules almost believed it. The purpose of the orbital was so that there was no gravity well to escape, so takeoff was anticlimactic. The dull metal of the orbital simply appeared to fall away, and the vast sphere of the Earth became visible. There were gasps from all around Jules, the image of Earth from space still utterly awesome to many who saw it. Jules found themselves unable to turn away from the window until the Earth had receded to a tiny speck, and the view was, as they say, full of stars. They were still staring out the window when the PA cracked to life, and a kindly voice said, "Welcome to space, folks. I'm your captain for this quick 4-month flight to Mars. I'll be setting the autopilot in a few minutes, and then it's going to be lights out for all of us for a while. If you could all get comfy with your hands in the envelopes, that would be great. Trust me, you don't want to be the only one awake for this trip. We've all but run out of coffee and pretzels." The person next to Jules nervously laughed, then slid their hand into the glove. Jules did the same, then said, "See you on the other side." "I sure hope so," the other person said. Then Jules felt a sharp pain in their arm. The whole ship seemed to spin ever so slightly, and Jules only had time to think that they'd never even introduced themselves to the person they were going to be sleeping next to for the next few months. You've been listening to Retaking Elysium, a Mars Consortium story, written and read by M. Darusha Wame. For more information, visit darusha.ca. Thanks for listening.